best known for working in the independent group, but is currently working on a biography of her grandfather, the sporting artist Tom Carr. And today, Anne's going to be speaking about 20th century British sporting art.
All right, thank you. Okay, well, good morning, and thank you for inviting me to speak today. It's such a splendid event at Newmarket and such a gorgeous day, although a bit cold. So in my paper, I've got 10 minutes, so I'll briefly look at the work of four 20th century British sporting artists in alphabetical order. Tom Carr, Lionel Edwards, Gilbert Holliday, and Edward Munnings. And my presentation includes more Tom Carr than the more familiar works of Edwards, Holliday and Munnings, as you're probably not surprised. And I've got to thank Anderson and Garland at Newcastle, the auction house, for helping me with the images of that. One of those is there. So I'll consider the accepted paradigm of modernist interpretations of 20th century British art, and the ways in which it could be contested by the inclusion of sporting art. I'll then look at the way in which sporting art of an earlier era was considered by, particularly, I think, Stephen, is it Deucher or Deucher?
Deucher.
And introduce, I think, hopefully, new, more inclusive ways of conceptualising 20th century sporting art, by taking the themes of painters, patrons, and places into account. I'm going to focus on depictions of fox hunting, which is perhaps a surprising subject for a vegetarian, such as myself, to be looking at, and I do struggle with this all the time. But I think it's something that is now sort of in the past, and we can sort of look at it as painting, but it is something I do grapple with all the time. So. Yeah. Oh, sorry, I've gone and pressed the wrong button. I don't know what to press. Sorry. Oh, right, okay. Right. So, sporting art, I think, particularly of the 20th century, is often overlooked and marginalised. And this is not surprising, I think, given the predominance of a modernist avant-garde discourse which permeates the history of 20th century British art, to which I should say I myself have contributed. And it's the impact of, as well of the new art history in the 70s and 80s, of which I'm a product, had the effect really of politicising readings of art and thus implying that it was the avant-garde which was really interesting and the really exciting bit, with its radical political allegiances. And I kind of live this all the time because I now work at Middlesex University, the home of Bloch, and all those kind of debates are all resurfacing. And, you know, this worked, I think, when we look at French art. I mean, brilliant work by Griselda Pollock and T.J. Clark, for example, that I grew up with. But then when we start looking at British art, I tend to think we might... Oh, I'm pressing the thing. We tend to struggle, I think, a bit. When I was starting my PhD on the independent group, I looked at Charles Harrison's English Art and Modernism, and it somehow seemed to me a bit of a struggle. And he doesn't mention sporting art, not surprisingly. And my own work over the past 35 years has also, I think, tended to focus on modernism and this sort of new sort of path of my research has led me to look at things differently, I suppose. But I've always argued for the importance of empiricism and for a more inclusive approach to the history of art, including things like material culture, design history, and so on. So perhaps it was kind of bubbling away there in the background. And this all, very strangely, tunes with Alfred Munnings and his 1949 speech as the departing president of the Royal Academy, where he controversially denounced modern art and Picasso in particular over the wet airwaves. And Munnings was such an enthusiastic sporting artist, and his work and the work he admired, particularly Reynolds and so on, did not fit the emerging kind of official modernist paradigm of post-war Britain that was then emerging. And it's kind of still taken for granted amongst art historians today that he was a bit of a Burke. and he's usually dismissed. I mean, I've heard this in conferences. He's usually really dismissed as such in the face of, you know, the hero Richard Hamilton's terrible experiences at the Royal Academy schools, for example. And he's dismissed without thought. But I think, you know, let's think again is my theme for today. And we've heard already about this book, Sporting Art in 18th Century England, and from 88, and that's an excellent, I think, scholarly analysis of sporting art. And he states, and I quote, "English sporting art is sometimes said to be a wrongly maligned and undervalued genre," end quote, which I think we'd all agree with here. However, I think it's also worth looking beyond England, which when we consider 20th century sporting art, and also his assertion that, and I quote, "of all sports, hunting is perhaps most readily and was for many centuries almost exclusively associated with the landed classes," end quote. And I think this also needs unpacking, as two of our artists were from working class backgrounds, that's Carr and Munnings, and certainly in the north of England, where I come from, and into the borders and into Scotland, fox hunting during the 20th century was a rural pursuit enjoyed by all social classes, not, as we're seeing here with Gilbert Holliday, where we're getting a kind of farm worker cowering on the fringes. And perhaps this also challenges the underlying assumptions of the Holliday painting. And sporting art and the depiction of hunting in particular is a popular art. I'm showing here a chintz, and it's been cut off at the bottom, but it's designed for mass production and it depicts hunting scenes, and there are lots and lots of other examples, like, you know, table mats that I used to have as a kid when you go to pubs. I mean, oh, I've completely lost it now. I don't know what's happened. So depicting hunting, many other examples. And this is sporting art as a popular art, which I think is important. And I think we can touch base a bit here with the Tate Britain's recent really excellent exhibition on British folk art, which I think would suggest a really useful touch point for us. So it's not just the paintings, it's also popular imagery, textiles, also book illustrations and prints.